I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, our guest today is Tyler Scheibenpflug. He's president of the Portneuf Valley Trail Alliance. Today, Peter, we're talking about trails around Pocatello.
You know, one of the hidden gems, well, I should say the hidden gems for people who aren't from Pocatello, is our trail system. It's absolutely fantastic.
We're surrounded by mountains, and the mountains are full of trails, so you got to get out there.
Right. You know, I love the fact that I can walk out of my house, hop on my bike, and ride to the top of Scout Mountain and back. And not once.
Not
get
even
on
break a sweat. I thought you were going to say.
Okay. Oh, yeah, totally.
You're pretty fit.
I've got a sweat broken before I even get to the City Creek Trailhead. Come on.
That's great. Well, yeah, and everybody that lives here knows, and people that move here, that's usually a thing that they figure out pretty fast.
Yeah, or one of the reasons why they decided to move to Pocatello.
Exactly. Well, before we get there, nature in the news.
Yeah, Leif, you know, we all kind of have an idea that planting trees have a generally positive net effect on the climate, including carbon removal and cooling. However, local effects are really kind of important in where you plant your trees for carbon removal and cooling.
What do you mean where you plant your trees?
So we've got some research coming out of UC Riverside, University of California, Riverside. And what they found is that if you're planting trees, more trees in warm, wet regions, like the tropics, where they grow year-round, it resulted in significantly more local cooling.
Okay.
So when you look on the global scale of planting trees and how it cools the planet, it's really kind of minimal. With these trees, you can cool the planet about 1/100th of a degree Fahrenheit.
That's pretty small.
It's pretty small. But when they're planted in tropical regions, you cool it by 1/10th of a degree.
Oh, that's
Fahrenheit.
Quite a lot. Yeah.
So that, you know, that's a tenfold increase in cooling. And when you think about 1/10th, you're kind of like, oh, that's not a whole lot. But these are large areas. And
we're talking about average temperature.
Yes.
So any small amount is actually
a large amount.
Massive.
Yeah, a large amount. And they even found some in some regions, like in Central Africa, in those tropical forests, they're cooling the local area by 1/8th of a degree, so 0.8 degrees, almost a full degree by planting more trees.
Right.
Yeah. And then you can kind of look at, too, with they're finding out with some research, if you're looking in planting more trees in Canada or, say, the Northeast, it doesn't have a really significant effect in cooling, but it increases the fire risks in some of these regions. And so
it offsets.
It kind of offsets it. And planting trees is great, but like everything else, we should probably think about where we're planting the trees.
Interesting. To get the bigger multiplying effect.
To get the best bang for the buck, in a sense.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting. Yep. Thanks for sharing that.
You
well,
bet.
So today we're talking about trails. So our question for today, of course, deals with that. What trail digging tool is named for a legendary Idaho firefighter? Some of you out there will know this one. When we come back, we're going to talk trails with Tyler very soon. Stay tuned.
One of the best ways to quickly reference what's happening around East Idaho is by visiting KISU's events calendar. That calendar, KISU's programming schedule, and on-demand access to KISU programs are just a click away when you download the new KISU mobile app for your phone or tablet. Search for KISU Radio in Apple or Android app stores to get started.
And we're back from the break. Our guest today is Tyler Scheibenpflug. He's president of the Portneuf Valley Trail Alliance. So first off, thanks for being here. Welcome to the Nature of Idaho.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here and talk about local trails.
Right on. Well, so tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So my day-to-day life, I'm a land surveyor. I work as a technician for a company here in Chubbuck. And then we recently took on this trail group. It's something that I've wanted to do here for a long time, but in the past when I've tried, I haven't really had the people behind me to do it with. It's definitely not something you can do alone. And so about 7 months ago, we started doing the thing and created this group, kind of had our first meeting in, think it might have been January or something like that. Yeah, I guess so 7 months. No, before that, November was our first meeting. And we have a really great crew of board of directors that we're involved with right now. And I got roped into being the lead president of it all. And I'm happy to be in that role and kind of taking charge on it. So
it was your idea, so of course you have to.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's an idea that a lot of people have had and a lot of people have seen the need. They either have tried to make it happen and it just hasn't worked, or you know, they just never made the steps and never made the connections.
So let's talk a little bit about the Trail Alliance and kind of combine that with what the Alliance is looking to do and our trails here in Pocatello.
Yeah, so really we are, the biggest thing we are focused on is creating sustainable and accessible trails. And that's trails for everybody, but that's trails that are going to be built and designed or maintained in a way that requires minimal work moving forward. A huge issue we have, and anyone who uses the trails here, especially in City Creek, knows that there's some pretty big ruts that the trails have become, or you get sections where there's multiple ruts next to each other, because as one gets worn away, people start walking next to that, and then next to that, and next thing you know, you have a trail that's now 8-10 feet wider than it really needs to be. And just trying to fix issues like that, or reroute issues like that, and not just in City Creek, but also make sure we have our access to the stuff on the Forest Service and the BLM, and really working to create a network of trails here. You know, one thing I've said is that we have this really, really incredible network of trails, but what we don't currently have is a network of people to maintain those trails.
Right. And so when we're thinking of trails, I've been up in the hills. There are many footpaths. There's sometimes two tracks. There's all sorts of manner of places I know people go and have been on, but I don't know sometimes whether it's a who manages the trail. Is it a trail I'm allowed to be on? Is it a trail I'm preferred not to be on because they're trying to remediate a part of the nature? What are some just basic guidelines to knowing, you know, should I be on this path or not be on this path? Real basic stuff.
The basic, most basic way is signage. Signage at the beginning and the ends of all of those trails. Signs on trails that aren't actually trails, you know, they're just footpaths or cow paths and they've gotten ridden in. And that is especially out in the forest, that's how a lot of our trails have come to be. They were really just cow paths that got ridden in either by the motorcycles or by bikes. And that's now a trail officially. But the Forest Service, like one thing that for the most part, they do have designation on everything that is an official trail, the same thing in City Creek. And that's one issue is like, if you go out there, actually isn't a ton of signage on a lot of these trails. They aren't super clearly marked sometimes. So that's one thing that we hope we can kind of support moving forward is have the funding to support more signs. And then the other, I guess another access would be, there's an app called Trail Forks. I'd say that's the most user-friendly, updated app that you can use.
Right.
And you can get on there and pull up and prove. For the most part, all the trails are really up to date. Tells you a little bit about them. And that's another thing I think moving forward, we really want to try and make sure that Trail Forks is up to date, because people can just throw trails on there, whether they're legal trails or not. So we're trying to make sure that all the trails that are on there are legal trails that are official. And
yeah, and when we say legal trails, everyone went through the official steps to get the permission, the permits to build the trails.
From the landowner,
whether it's the city, National Forest, BLM, et cetera. And that when they're built, not only are you looking at usability and whether it's, you know, good for both hikers, runners, and bikers, but we also have to look at the effects on the environment. You know, there's a reason why switchbacks are put in place. Simply, you know, because you're going up a fairly steep area, and people who cut through a switchback and create another trail, now you've just made this massive erosion point where all the water funnels right through there. That switchback slows down. Erosion makes it easier for those on mountain bikes to climb up. But, you know, hikers, yeah, stay on those trails.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think a lot of people don't think a lot about here is because we live in a desert, they don't think about where's the water going to go. And right. That's one thing when we're looking at all these trails, we're thinking, okay, well, where's the water going to go and how are we going to manage that? And I say all this, you know, unfortunately, we're not quite at a point where we're doing a lot of trail work on our own yet. Right now, that's all being done by the city. There's a volunteer trail crew under that. But our hope moving forward is that we kind of adopt that trail crew, and then the city can use their paid employees to still do work on the trails. But now we can take this trail crew and not only do stuff on the city, but go to the BLM and Forest Service trails as well.
Sure. Talk a little bit about the different kinds of users of trail systems. Peter mentioned a few, but you want to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, so here in Pocatello, we have a huge range. So, you know, you have mountain bikers, hikers, dog walkers, big trail running community here. And then you have a whole nother sect of motorized travel, motorcycles, e-motorcycles, Jeeps, you know, any sort of off-road vehicles. So all those come into account. The thing we're really focusing on is the human powered side of it. So, you know, we can only have so much reach right now and be able to only do so much. And we want to continue to work with those groups. So like, I know there's a Jeep group. I think there's a motorized one as well for motorcycles, and then the backcountry horsemen as well. So we'd love to work with those groups moving forward, because we have so many users here, and we all need to realize that the amount of users is only increasing and increasing exponentially. Look at the numbers.
Is there a division of trails that are for motorized only, where we're separating out motorized versus human power?
Yeah, so pretty much any trail is you're allowed to bike on it or walk on it for the most part, I think, around here. I don't think we have anything that bikes are not allowed on, mm-hmm. now that I think about it. Something that maybe moving forward we could have, and I'd like to see. And then the biggest restrictions are actually from the motorized wanting to go on certain things. But as far as I can think, there are only, I think, a total of 3 trails on all of the district of the National Forest here that are non-motorized. It's Birthday, West Fork, and Parody. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and I even think we only have one section of a one-way trail. And so as trails get developed, or if you go elsewhere,
it's
very aware of signage, because some trails are only one way, as in you can only climb it or
descend
it. Yeah. And especially if you've got multi-use trails and you've got some blind spots in there, you don't want someone bombing down that trail on a mountain bike while the hikers are going up. And so just definitely pay attention to direction.
We don't currently have any directional trails at all. There's a couple that have a suggestion. Mm-hmm. I guess Lower City Creek one section. So I do think that is something we will probably try and adapt moving forward. And the last thing we want to do is keep anybody off a trail. But as we grow and as we build these new trails and as more people continue to be, it's just something, it's the reality that we live in. Is with so many people out on the trails, we want everyone to be safe and we want everyone to have the best time. And sometimes to do that, you just need trails that are designated specifically for those types. And the same thing, you know, if you're riding a motorcycle, you don't want to come around a corner and always have to worry about a person hiking or biking right there. It might be nice to have something where, you know, they can really go and open it up and not have to worry about that. So
tell me a little bit about seasonality in the trail system. So we're doing this interview in the fall and it's lovely, more or less dry weather. But, you know, how does use of the trails and kinds of use of the trails change over the season?
Yeah. So as we get into, you know, we here the transition seasons really aren't great for our trails because of our soil type. If there's just a little too much water, it's not fun to be on. Real, real sticky mud, lots of clay in our soil. So that's our swing seasons don't see a lot of traffic. But once they have snow on them, we're seeing. Now it's Nordic skiing, backcountry skiing, snowshoeing,
fat bikes are starting to show up. They're getting more popular.
And
yeah.
One cool thing that we've recently been in discussion with, a local bike shop here, Oregon Trail Bikes, they've had in their possession a small grooming machine that's specifically groomed to groom single track. And the last year or so, it didn't get any use, and they're looking to kind of have somebody be able to run that, because the person who was running it before isn't around anymore. So that's something that our organization, I think, will try and take on, so that way we at least have one or two trails that we can go on that are groomed, and that benefits everybody. That means once it sets up, when that groomer comes through, then you can walk on it, you can snowshoe on it without major divots and stuff, which Nordic skiers really don't like. But.
Well, and I'd like to kind of point out, too, as the seasons are changing, when you're riding your bike or even when you're hiking, and the trails are muddy, it really does damage the trails. And you would be surprised that footprints can really rut a trail as well. So on the shoulder seasons, just be aware of it. And if you come up to mud, either walk around it or walk your bike around it. You know, again, this is, as a trail alliance, we're talking about every trail user. And we really want everyone to think on ways to keep our trails in as best shape as possible. And knowing when and how to use them is important too.
You know, as we're talking here, I didn't realize that we covered Peter is also a member of the PDTA board. So when he says we, he's referring to us. So yeah, we're both kind of here preaching the same story. So.
Yep.
That's good. Well, let's talk a little bit about etiquette, because you're kind of tilting into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. We think about if you're a mountain biker and you're heading up a hill and there's a mountain biker coming down the hill, who's got priority?
The rule is the uphill rider has the right of way. However, times I do think are changing on that, or have changed a little bit. You know, I think that rule still applies, but I know myself personally and a lot of people I'm with, if I'm going up the hill and someone's coming down and it's easy for me to get off, I'm just going to get off and let them by. You know, I think it's really a matter of being aware there's other users out there more than you, and you always need to be aware of that. When you're flying around a corner going down, or when you're climbing up and your head's down, maybe look up a little and just be aware of other people on the trail.
Right.
And yeah, for whoever it's easier, get off, say hello, tell them to have a nice day. And it's going to be a lot easier if we're all friendly to each other out there.
And hikers have the right of way, period. You know, hikers,
hikers,
walkers
always have the right of way.
Right? Yeah. And I would say, as a dog owner, just be aware of the people around you with your dog. Not everyone loves dogs.
Right.
And so just kind of, you know, bring a leash with you. And sometimes, you know, dogs like to chase bikes as well. So, you know, just again, it's a matter of being respectful to all the people around you. And honestly, not just the trails, but the habitat and ecosystem around your trail system as well.
Yeah. And I'm going to roll on with that thought. So recently we've submitted our first grant application 2 weeks ago. And our goal with that is to install dog way stations not at the trailheads, because some of them already have that, but within a quarter mile of the trailhead, because a lot of times people will start their hike and then their dog will go, they'll put it in the bag and be like, I'll pick this up on my way back. And as we all know, that sometimes doesn't happen. Or, you know, who wants to carry poop on them for their entire hike? It'll be pretty nice to have that. We'll see what happens. Hopefully we get that grant and can make that happen early next year. Mm-hmm. and kind of keep some of that out of our creeks and out of our water systems.
Right. And again, for those that are interested, as we make these improvements, we need help. You don't have to be a board member, but you can be willing to volunteer on the trail crews, on cleanup crews, etc. We have a lot of amazing trails.
Yep.
So we need a lot of people to be out and about working with us as well.
And like I said before, we don't have a ton of those opportunities right now. We're going to try and make a few happen in these next couple months before the snow flies, now that we've kind of got our feet established. But moving next year, yeah, keep your eyes out. Show up to some work days, because we're definitely going to be doing some exciting stuff.
So let's move into, what does it take to... Do you want to start with maintaining a trail or building a new trail?
Oh, let's start with maintaining. I think starting with maintaining, because that's majority what we're going to be doing moving forward. I don't foresee a lot of like big trail projects happening in the near future of like new trails. As exciting as fun that would be, we have so many trails that need maintenance. Kind of going into what we do, the first thing we want to do is brushing. Trails need it about twice a year around here. We have a really, really heavy spring grow season, with some pretty thick grasses and shrubbery and stuff that really needs to be brushed back. And that brushing does two things. Not only does it make it way more pleasant to walk on and ride on, but it also allows your full use of your tread of your trail. Because as it gets brushed in, everyone gets more and more to the very center of the trail, and it erodes from the middle, and you start getting that cupping that happens. So brushing, and then after that, the biggest thing we think about is where's the water going to go? How do we build this to a proper grade where the water is going to drain off and not a pool in areas, and B, not erode the trail by running down fall line. So we really want to think about the tread, and that kind of goes into the building of a trail. That's really what we want to think about is, how's this going to flow? How's it going to be beneficial for all trail users? Because right now we're building multi-purpose trail. And, you know, anything that we're doing that's new is going to be a multi-purpose trail. And just think about how that's going to affect everybody. How are the runners going to feel coming down this at high rates of speed and coming around the corner? So, yeah.
Yeah, and then we look at cupping. You know, we can pull the cups out.
Yeah,
but that's quite a bit of work.
Yeah, and there's some spots that we've gone and we've measured, and it's a foot and a half to potentially 2 feet in spot. And when you're riding through it, you don't really think about it because it feels kind of good. But then you go and stop it in that section, and we're like, okay, how do we fix this issue? And the work ends up being way more than it's worth. So that's when we have to think about doing a reroute and taking stuff. And a lot of these issues are because some of the trails were originally built without the switchbacks and their fall line. So all that water has just been going straight down the trail. The bikes are going straight down the trail. And so we just need a way to get that water off. And the easiest way is by building something that goes more cross slope than straight down slope.
I will tell you, the cupping is an issue for me because pedal strikes on the sides happen quite frequently.
Yeah. And running with your feet tilted in is no fun. So, yeah. And to further continue that, so currently the city does own two pieces of mini heavy equipment. We have a mini excavator and a dingo, which is just a small machine with a blade on it. And skills have been being learned on those. We've got some new people working on. I know Peter's been on a project over in the Nordic Center, mm-hmm. where the city's doing a new snowshoe trail. And so we're working on that. And then hopefully next year, the Trail Alliance will be able to use some of that equipment and start doing some of the trail work that we want to do. So.
I mean, the equipment really does save time, especially when we're coming in and having to repair some of it with the bucket. It's a small bucket, and it's a little bit easier to reduce some of the cupping versus using a hoe or by hand and all that. That takes a lot of time and manpower. And up at the Nordic Center, the new snowshoe trails, it's also, again, every trail we put in is multi-use. And it's been set up with switchbacks and berms to handle fat bikes as well. So looking at year-round use mm-hmm. on our trails that's just natural, and it's a good thing to do.
Do you have any idea of how many people or how well-used trails are in our town? Like, is there any way to
quantify
that?
So they're actually, we've been talking, we're going to start digging into some study that was done, I want to say 4 years ago, done by the city in partnership with the Forest Service. I don't know if they ended up getting the BLM on board yet or not, but it's basically a survey that was done and where you can go in, and if you know a trail, if you know the condition of the trail, you can fill all that information out.
Sure.
I don't think we have great tallies on like the actual number of trail users on specific trails. It's something I'd really like to look at. I think potentially we could get that information from Strava maybe, because that would provide us at least a good ratio of the types of users on trails. And these are really important numbers that we need to know moving forward, because it's going to value how we make our decisions.
Yeah, Exactly.
I'm always amazed. I walk the dog in the morning now because it's too hot in the afternoon. I'm up at Coosick Creek Trailhead between 6 and 6:15, and I'm always surprised when I'm the only car up there. But by the time I get done, shortly after 7:30, the trailhead is close to full. Yep. Yeah. And so people use the trails constantly.
Yeah. It's a huge number. There's thousands of users a day probably.
Right. Right. I mean, anecdotally, anytime I go to a trailhead, you're not the only one there.
Yep.
It's very rare. Even after a recent snowstorm, I usually go up to Gibson or something like that, and there's always people there before me.
Yep. But the beauty of around here is it is at the same time pretty easy to get on a different trail and then not see anybody for the rest of the day.
Well, that's true, too.
Which is what we love about it. So,
you can get out there. Well, so we're thinking about maintaining. Are there possibilities of new trails? I mean, not in the immediate future, but if there were to be, what are there trail types that we don't currently have at all?
Yeah, there definitely are. I think a lot of that focuses on mountain bike style trails,
mm-hmm. okay.
What's known as a flow trail. We really don't have anything that's a proper flow trail with berms and rollers and jumps. And there has been a lot of talk about trying to build something like that. Maybe build a small mountain bike park. you know, if you go to Boise or somewhere like that, there's multiple bike parks in that area.
Yeah.
And they're small little areas with just a gentle slope, but it gives you the opportunity to really build up a lot of features and then go there and build up your skills. And just like really, really beginner trails. And the big thing that we were talking about recently is what we don't have is any like fully adaptable trails. Trails for people with disabilities that are using special wheeled machines that are just slightly wider than a mountain bike, right? So mountain bike, you only have two tires. Actually, I was riding behind someone who was on one this weekend up at Galena Lodge. And so they're a trike. So they're two tires in the front and one tire in the rear. And all they really need is just a slightly wider trail width.
Yeah.
And they can pretty much go the same place you can on anything else. So I really want to see that moving forward. I want to see some trails that can be done, really accessed by truly everybody. And there's some talk about doing that at the, there's going to be a new parking lot at Upper City Creek. And so there's some talk about doing a little bike park up in that area.
Mm-hmm. And you think about it, especially with the beginner trails and the adaptive sport trails, it's still, there is grade there, but it's not too bad. Yep. And you've got a parking lot right there. I'm just sitting there thinking, how do you get a 10, 11-year-old kid excited about mountain biking when everything is a climb to the cool parts? And
especially around here, it's not only a climb, it can be a pretty aggressive climb.
Yeah.
At least
yeah.
compared to some of the places I've ridden before. It can be discouraging for a new rider.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So increasing accessibility, mm-hmm. that'd be fantastic. Well, I feel like we're close to our trivia question.
Yeah.
We've got tools. You have tools that you use out there on the maintaining your trails. So what trail digging tool is named for a legendary Idaho firefighter?
That's going to be the Pulaski, named after the Ed Pulaski, known for his response to the 1910 fire where he saved a bunch of firefighters. So
what does a Pulaski look like?
So a Pulaski, it's a shorter handle tool. It's like shorter than a shovel. And on one end, you have a blade. And then on the other hand, you have a small, sharp hoe. And it's a pretty useful tool. We don't use it a ton. I mean, we use it around here, but since we're not cutting a lot of roots, mm-hmm. it's not getting used as much as once you get into something with lots of roots. That's where it becomes really useful because you can kind of dig out the root and then chop it away. But we use the McLeod, which is a big flat blade with forks on one end. That can be really useful because you can move a lot of material with that. Rocos, which are just kind of smaller, full-length handle, and they kind of have multiple widths that you can dig with. So there's a whole variety of stuff. And then tons of tools that we use for brushing, everything from weed eaters to chainsaws.
Yeah.
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 You'll get a good workout if you want to help maintain or build trails, that's for certain. Well, Tyler, I really want to thank you for joining us today. And for anyone who really is excited and wants to help maintain our trail systems in Pocatello or uses our trail systems, please go to pvtrails.org to find out a little bit more about the Portneuf Valley Trail Alliance and what you can do to support our local trails.
You can become a member. We have different levels of membership. You get certain amounts of swag with those things. So everybody likes to get a little bonus with our logo on it.
Yeah.
Definitely we encourage you to become a member. That's really going to help us in being able to do all this stuff that we want to do.
Very cool. Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU. Shows are produced at the KISU studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of all past episodes can be found at KISU.org and select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to NOIDKISU@ISU.edu.